This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The 1980s was the Al Franken decade, but the 90s belonged to Stuart Smalley. My guest Al Franken has been associated with Saturday Night Live for many years as a writer, performer, and co-producer. Over the past couple of years on the show, he's been satirizing the recovery movement through his character Stuart Smalley. Stuart is a caring nurturer who is addicted to 12-step programs and dispenses advice on how to keep a positive attitude. Now Franken has created a book of Stuart's daily affirmations and an audio tape of his guided visualizations. They're both called I'm Good Enough, I'm Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like Me.
I'm going to do a great guided visualization tape, and I'm going to help people because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. Hello, I'm Stuart Smalley, and welcome to You're Good Enough, You're Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like You, a healing journey through the dysfunctional forest and other guided visualizations. It's a long title, but that's okay. It's appropriate. Now, before we go any further in this tape, I do want to start with a little warning. Guided visualizations are powerful stuff, and hopefully the visualizations on this tape will transport the you inside of you, or whatever, and free that inside person to be the best you inside of you that you can be. But I think I would be remiss if I did not tell you that I am not a licensed therapist, and while I am being paid to do this, I am not a professional in the therapeutic sense. And I do worry that I will misuse this power and really screw somebody up, you know, accidentally. So, while the whole point is to relax and surrender yourself to the tape so that you can be transported to a healing place, just keep an eye out and you know, if you're beginning to freak or something, you know, just pull out. Okay, I'm beginning to think this was a mistake, the warning. The whole point is to feel safe, and I think this is just scaring people. Can we cut the tape?
Why don't we start with you running through some of the many 12-step programs that Stuart Smalley has been in?
Okay, Stuart is in five. OA, because he's powerless over food, and it's Overeaters Anonymous. Al-Anon, first ACOA, I guess, Adult Children of Alcoholics. As Stuart says, my father is an active alcoholic, a big stinking drunk. And he's in Al-Anon, which is for family members of alcoholics. Thanks again, Dad. Then he's in Debtors Anonymous. I'm a anorexic spender. I have difficulty spending money on myself, as you can see from this sweater. I'm sorry, this is radio. And he is in CODA, which is Codependence Anonymous. It covers a lot of the same area, you know, material as Al-Anon. And I get more out of Al-Anon. But, you know, if you get more out of CODA, good. Good for you. Whatever.
Now, how did you come up with the kind of whiny voice that you use for the character?
You know, the voice, it's funny. Sometimes when you write something, it comes with a voice, and this just did. And I don't know why exactly, other than maybe there are a few people. I actually belong to one of those groups. I belong to an anonymous fellowship for friends and family members of drunks or recovering alcoholics, too. And I think there were a number of people in rooms that I've met who sort of remind me of Stuart. And I guess the reason I came up with Stuart and the way he is that one of the great things I learned going to this fellowship is that I can learn stuff from people who I never in a million years thought I could. And so I sort of deliberately made Stuart pretty, pretty silly and lame in a lot of ways, but very kind of courageous and sweet and vulnerable in his own way.
I think that's one of the things I really love about the character, is that you do kind of have it both ways. You know, it's like really funny and you're really mocking the character. And at the same time, you could tell you have a real kind of affection and caring for him, too.
Well, actually, people who know me very well know that there's a lot of Stuart inside of me. A lot of the insecurity and a lot of the self-doubt and all that stuff. And I think it's in a lot of people. And part of one thing Melody Beattie, who wrote the preface to the book, she wrote Codependent No More. One of the things we were discussing early what she was going to write, and she said something about the book giving people the permission, giving themselves the permission to have the Stuart inside of them.
Oh, and thanks.
I thought that was really nice, because I think there are parts of all of us that are very vulnerable and very, you know, can be stupid at times. And mm-hmm. I think it's okay, you know, it's fine to give yourself permission to do that and not, you know, beat yourself up.
How do you deal with some of the language of the recovery movement, which you mock a lot, but also probably have some respect for it, too? Like Stuart's always saying, you know, that, well, this isn't my best show, but that's okay.
Right.
So there's all this, like, affirmation in the language.
Well, affirmations are, I mean, first of all, a program has this incredible amount of jargon.
Yeah.
And the jargon is usually just a shorthand for some concept. So all it really is just a way for someone to grasp, hold on to a concept. And most of these concepts are pretty sound. And so, but the jargon can get pretty grating and silly. And yet, when the concept has helped you so much, and the way you got to the concept was through the jargon, you kind of hold on to the jargon. So that's Stuart is a program junkie, so he is a jargon junkie. So actually, people send me these things. I got one the other day, which is, fear is a dark room where negatives get developed. Which is a gift through the mail. So... if you're listening and you got good ones, send them to me. Stuart will use them.
What are some of your other favorites?
Another one someone sent to me was, it's easier to put on slippers than to carpet the entire world.
Yes, I like that a lot.
And there's one I'm doing that I heard in program that I'm using this week, because Stuart is going to be on the show this week. He's apologizing for yesterday's show, which is what he always does. And he evidently took Madonna's inventory. And he says, this is a good thing to remember. He says, when you're pointing a finger at someone else, remember there are three fingers pointing back at you.
Now, tell me your reaction to this aspect of the recovery movement, the people who say, humor is a good recovery tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stuart believes that.
Yeah.
He says, one of the affirmations is, today I will laugh at least once. And I've already laughed today, so I'm fine.
There are some people in the recovery movement who really do believe that humor is good therapy. So although they are humorless themselves, they have taught themselves like little jokes and little ways to be humorous. And they're very proud of it. And it's mm-hmm. a kind of like prescription for their health. Do you come across people like that? And I wonder how you react to them and how they react to you.
Well, you know, that's funny. As you said that, it's true. And it's the first time I've realized that, which I can't believe that's the first time I realized that. Thank you for no, it is true. There are people who because there are laughter in these rooms. By the way, there's much. I've gone to some open AA meetings, and there's a lot more laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous than in Al-Anon, which is really unfair if you think about it. But no, there are. You're absolutely right. There are people who just by nature have no sense of humor, but know that it's a good thing and are working on it. and it's a really, really ugly thing to observe. But I, you know, God bless them. And I know, well, that's their Stuart actually does have a terrible sense of humor, which is, I use, for example, this week we're doing a Halloween show. So he's dressing as a skeleton, okay? Because
yeah.
It's scary, and it reminds me that I'm a human being. And then Stuart has a little joke, which is, I was thinking of coming with something a little bit more original, you know, like dressing up as a feeling. But, you know, what does dread look like other than, you know, my mother? That's like Stuart's sense of humor. So, there are a lot of this jargon, to some extent, a lot of it has humor in it. But there are actually some very, very funny people in these. Actually, you know, the people have a preconception of people who go in the program, and it's just, you know, it's kind of wrong. But there are, some are thicker than others. So, you know, you'll be in a room, and some will be thicker than others.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Al Franken, and he has a new book in the voice of the Stuart Smalley character mm-hmm. that he created for Saturday Night Live, and the book is called I'm Good Enough, I'm Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like Me.
It's a long title, but that's okay. It's catchy.
We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Al Franken of Saturday Night Live is my guest. You've probably also seen him on Comedy Central, if in fact you have that and you have cable. And he also has a new book based on his Stuart Smalley character, which he created for Saturday Night Live. I think one of the really funniest Stuart Smalley sketches that you did for Saturday Night Live was about the genocide of the Kurds right after the war in the Gulf. Why don't I play an excerpt of this?
Hello, I'm Stuart Smalley. I've had a hard time focusing on myself this week because I've been so upset about what's happening in Iraq to the Kurds. It has been just a horrendous week for them. And so today I have decided to share my experience, strength, and hope with any Kurds who might be watching. First of all, when I've had a bad week, I try to recite, to remember to recite the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, you are a Kurd. Can you change your situation? Probably not. It's out of your control. But what can you change? Your attitude. You are angry, and that's okay. You're entitled to your anger. You're angry at President Bush because he urged you to rebel against Saddam Hussein and then he abandoned you. He made a mistake, which is okay. President Bush is not perfect. He's a human being. Human beings make mistakes. And you're angry at Saddam Hussein, who is a very sick person, who obviously hates himself and is taking it out on you.
Al Franken, what gave you the idea of viewing genocide in the language of the recovery movement?
This actually, in your introduction to that, it was the first time I've heard genocide and funniest in the same sentence. I guess it's just that, you know, recovery, as said from earlier in the interview, I believe recovery works. It just has its limits. And Stuart is a character who is a recovery addict, and his whole life is seen through the prism of recovery. So he just wanted to comfort the Kurds, and it was sort of meant to sort of highlight the limit of recovery. And also, it's really one of the concepts that I have a tough time with in recovery is higher power and turning your will over to higher power. Because as I'm Jewish and I was born in 1951, and I had sort of the Holocaust pounded into my head. And so it's always very hard for me to sort of turn my will over to a loving higher power who could have allowed that to happen. So, but again, higher power in the program is how you've come to understand him. And I work on that. So to me, what was happening to the Kurds that week was one of those, one of those historical events which makes me doubt the existence of a benevolent higher power.
Now, have you met John Bradshaw, one of the heroes of the recovery movement?
You know, I have. I was talking to him about doing something together, and that thing's on hold right now. But We actually did discuss, you know, humor and recovery and the fact that if he did something with me, he might be criticized and that kind of thing. But he just said that, you know, that some people are at a more advanced stage of recovery than others, and that some there are people don't think stuff is funny. But I have run into very, very little of that, really.
So what would you be doing with John Bradshaw?
Well, in the book, there's a little section where you follow Stewart goes to the National Shame Conference to speak, and he feels like a fraud because all the other speakers there are recovery professionals, and Stewart, you'll remember, is not a licensed therapist. So Stewart actually kind of feels ashamed to be at the National Shame Conference, and he speaks there, and he's sort of over-prepared in a lot of ways. He has, like, slides and tapes and film and stuff like that, and it just becomes a disaster, and he runs off stage and cries and stuff like that, and John Bradshaw comforts him in the book, I was talking to HBO about doing this as a little episode.
Yes, he writes, "I forgot to tell you John Bradshaw is the featured speaker at the conference. Somebody pinch me."
Yeah, Stewart to some extent is a Bradshaw wannabe. Bradshaw is his hero.
I can imagine that if you were at a fellowship meeting and somebody got up and wanted to say, I'm upset, but I have a right to my anger, that they wouldn't be able to say it because it would sound so absurd after having heard Stuart Smalley say it.
There are people who have said to me that after, and these are people who enjoy the character, who are in recovery, who say that they do feel a little stupid saying some of the things they've heard Stewart say. But I think that might be, I don't think that's bad.
Al Franken works with Saturday Night Live as a writer, performer, and co-producer. His new Stewart Smalley book and audio cassette are both titled I'm Good Enough, I'm Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like Me.
We still have time for a short affirmation, so look in the mirror. Come on, don't look at me. Only you can help you. Say hello, me. I am a Kurd. I'm glad I'm a Kurd. I am fun to be with. Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. Not everybody, but that's their problem. And your problem, too. Okay, I'm sorry. This is not my best show, but that's okay. Because this is Stu Smalley saying, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
This has been today's Daily Affirmation with Stuart Smalley.
Al Franken will be back with us in the second part of our show to talk about satirizing the presidential campaign. This is Fresh Air. A lot of the political humor on Saturday Night Live is written by my guest, Al Franken. He's worked with the show on and off since the mid-70s as a writer, performer, and co-producer. Franken has also been co-anchoring the campaign coverage for the Comedy Central cable channel. Earlier on today's show, we talked with him about satirizing the recovery movement through his character, Stewart Smalley. We invited him back to talk about the presidential campaign. In previous seasons on Saturday Night Live, Franken has done impressions of Pat Robertson, Paul Tsongas, and Paul Simon. Now Dana Carvey does Bush and Perot, Phil Hartman does Clinton. I asked Franken if he's tried any of the current presidential contenders.
I can do Perot, not as well as Dana Carvey, and I can do. See, when you write for someone, you can kind of do them, but you only do them well enough to be able to, you know. Perot actually called Dana, and I was on the line, and he wouldn't listen. It was very odd. He called up, and we had left message, because he called to thank us for the first piece we wrote, or to tell us how much he enjoyed it, and we got him on the phone, and I was in the line, and Dan would go, well, Mr. Perot, now, here's the deal. You know, if they can make you look like me, they can make me look like Burt Reynolds. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Dan would go, thank you, Mr. Perot. Also on the line is Al Franken, who, now, here's the deal. If you go out and campaign for me, and we're both out there, it'd be twice as effective. Well, that's very funny. You know, also on the line is Al. Now, how do they do that? How do they make you look that way? You know, and he just, I didn't get a big listening vibe from the man.
So you've been writing the Perot sketches for Dana Carvey?
I've been writing them actually lately with Dana Carvey. Uh-huh. Dana, once he gets a character,
right,
really, really is hilariously, it can improvise in the character.
Have you been in on the Bush stuff too?
Yes, I do a lot of that with Dana and Jim Downey, and so yeah, over the years I've been writing that.
When did you start hearing those special cadences that George Bush uses when he really gets going?
You mean the not finished sentences, the bits and pieces of words here, there, over there?
That's it.
It took us actually 3 or 4 times to doing Bush till we finally got him.
You know, I really didn't hear those kinds of sentence fragments in George Bush's speaking style until Dana Carvey started doing it. And then after Dana Carvey, I couldn't listen to Bush without hearing Dana Carvey's doing Bush. And I started wondering if Bush ever heard Dana Carvey doing Bush, and if so, how he could still keep talking that way. It seems to me you'd get so self-conscious about it.
He did, actually. First of all, Dana's been to the White House and has met the president. And it was by invitation. He didn't just sneak in there. I actually remember we were doing, like, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. We were doing a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And it was, I heard Bush say that at one point, and he said he felt very embarrassed. He just said, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. And he said, not being Dana Carvey, shouldn't have said that. He does that. He mentions Dana actually quite a bit. I saw him on something the other day where they saw him backstage. It was like a documentary, and he just went, this is the real me, not Dana Carvey. So he, you know, I think what they do is they give him tapes. And like the one time we ever did anything on the show that supported a Bush policy, they trotted out saying, see, Saturday Night Live is supporting us on this.
What's this?
Oh, we did a thing. It wasn't him. It was like during the Gulf War, we did a press briefing thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where the press just keeps asking questions that obviously
would give away important secret information.
Yeah. And lo and behold, Sununu comes out and said, we were going to start opening things to the press, but we saw this sketch on Saturday Night Live, and we realized that the people don't want us to tell the press what's going on.
Well, how'd you feel about that?
Well, I felt like, oh, now, finally, this is the first time that you take any, you know, they're just, I just felt they were lying again. Yeah, that's really what made them decide that.
But the sketch really did criticize the press.
Well,
and take the side of the administration.
I guess it did. It was meant to be a joke, and it was meant to be about the fact that there were some press members who were asking questions you couldn't answer.
Right.
So, and it was taken by the highest levels of our government to mean that that the press should be kept away from any real information about the war.
Is Clinton hard to do?
I think he is right now. We haven't quite figured him out. I mean, he's Phil does a great impression of him. But as far as writing him and figuring out what the hook is, we don't quite have it. I mean, there's the conciliator, the person that wants to be something to everybody. There's the person who's, you know, we take advantage of a certain inability to explain, like, the draft and stuff like that, too. In the special tomorrow night, he explains that, you know, I did not see several of the early original Saturday Night Lives because at the time between 77 and 79, Hillary and I were having marital difficulty, and she had thrown my TV out the bedroom window and on the lawn with several of my suits, which she had ripped up. And then later in the show, he goes, earlier in the show, I said that that I didn't see many of the original Saturday Night Lives because Hillary and I were having marital difficulties. And while that is in essence true. I did have the time frame mixed up. And it's just like, you know, let's just say that we started having marriage problems about the time Chevy Chase left the show. And they extended to the early Conehead period. Let's just say that during the first Mr. Bill, our marriage was just god-awful. So that was, so, you know, we're using what we can. But eventually we're going to have to really figure the guy out.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Al Franken is my guest. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Al Franken is a writer and performer on Saturday Night Live. There was a sketch on Saturday Night Live last week, tell me if you wrote this or not, where Perot and Stockdale are driving.
I didn't.
Okay.
That was Dana and Robert Smigel.
Okay.
That was a very, very funny sketch.
Yeah.
I felt a little uncomfortable about it.
How come? And I should mention this. In the sketch, you know, Perot finally, like, throws out Stockdale. He throws him out of the car because he's just really embarrassed by him. He's a real liability.
Well, he tricks him to get out of the car and drives away real fast. I thought it was really funny, and I thought, you know, Dana's Perot's hilarious, and I thought Phil Stockdale was really funny. And to some degree legitimate. I mean, he, you know, Stockdale, it's just the way events conspired against the guy. He was asked to be a stand-in for as a vice presidential running mate so that Perot could qualify again on the ballots. In the spring, he needed a name to be the vice presidential candidate, and he asked Stockdale to do it on the assumption that he would get another vice presidential candidate, right? And Stockdale said okay, and then when Perot dropped out, obviously no one would join the ticket in the interim. And then when he jumped back in, there was Stockdale. So, and that was like 10 days, or he jumped back in like 2 weeks or 10 days before the debate. And Stockdale probably didn't even know he had to debate until a few days before. And, you know, Gore and Quayle, you know, eat and sleep this stuff. So, and no one could have done that. And then, but then the performance was so, it was kind of embarrassing and kind of funny. And, but I mean, he was a, you know, prisoner of war for 10 years or 8 years while I was, you know, at college throwing frisbees and, you know, smoking pot and protesting against the war. So I feel in a very, I don't feel in a very comfortable position to make fun of the guy.
Right. Right.
You know, but this thing he said lately about Clinton having blood on his hands because he organized protests, that didn't make me very happy.
Mm-hmm. How emotionally involved have you been with this campaign?
Well, I guess I should make a disclaimer, which is that I'm always for the Democrat. I always am. And so if you're listening to me, I mean, I was for Dukakis, and actually, I voted for John Anderson, which I kind of regret now. But I will be really bummed out on Tuesday if Bush wins. It'll be really hard for me to be anchoring this broadcast. I 4 years ago, I had the honor of hosting, emceeing the Dukakis Victory Party in Boston. So I was up there and I was the comedian emceeing this event. And my first joke was this, and I went on like at 8 or 9. I can't remember. We knew by then. It wasn't official, but my first joke was, well, I've prepared two kinds of material tonight. One in case we win, just narrowly win, and the other in case we win by a landslide. And it was actually kind of funny. I mean, it was actually kind of fun because it was just gallows humor night.
What else did you say?
Well, we would do things like every time Sam Donaldson, because Sam Donaldson was up there, every time Sam would come on, you know, we'd see the ABC camera light go on, we would just start chanting, "Sam... Sam," and but then You know, so I started trying to orchestrate everything so for the cameras, you know, for when the networks came on to show us. So one point I had, you know, I said, well, you know, let's not cede patriotism to the Republicans. This, by this time we had lost. Really, we had just really lost. So we sang the national anthem. And it was actually quite emotional. And, but woo, boy, that was bad. Woo! So I'm not going to be in Little Rock. I'm going to be in New York. I'm going to be the anchor. I have to have some anchor-like objectivity, and which I won't have.
Al Franken, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Al Franken is a writer and performer on Saturday Night Live. He has a new book and audio cassette in the voice of Stuart Smalley, a character he created for Saturday Night Live. The book and tape are called I'm Good Enough, I'm Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like Me.